Welcome to Crushed by Margaret Caborn Smith, the podcast where I grill a guest about the horror and hilarity of unrequited love. My guest today is hilarious actor, podcaster, author and comedy pin-up, Izzy Sutty. Izzy, hello.
Hello.
Hello. You have written a lot about the reality of love,
I feel like.
Have you had a lot of fantasy relationships in your life?
Yes, I have. I think much more so when I was younger.
Yeah.
Not just fantasy relationships, of which I had loads, but also, like, you know, after a breakup when you fantasise that you didn't break up or that he sees you.
Like, it's the only way to cope sometimes, yeah. I think, with the pain.
Yeah, that even there was this guy who kind of broke my heart when I was like, I don't know, maybe 17, and he was 23, which is a bit weird now, actually.
Yeah.
But, you know,
lovely to remember those things.
It was the 90s. Yeah. He really did break my heart. And for years and years, whenever I walked along this stretch of road that I knew he drove his dad's Land Rover along, which was really the only way into the centre of town, every single car that went past, I would imagine that he was driving it. And so I'd walk in a certain way and sort of look really nonchalant, like, I'm just looking at a hedge. I'm not even looking at what cars are going past.
I actually think when I'm doing exercise, if I want to make sure that my technique is good, I imagine that someone I fancy is watching me.
Yes. You could probably actually do like 5 minutes longer.
Yeah, exactly. And your posture's better. It's very...
Maybe that's the answer. If you want people to work harder in exercise classes, you put a panel in the room that people they fancy can stand behind and watch them. Do you think it would be better if the people exercising could see the people they fancy?
Oh, no, they're just told. Because the truth is, we're not getting those people in to watch us exercise. I'd love it, but it's not going to happen, sadly.
No, I'm not really talking about us because we're sort of old and settled now, aren't
we? Sure. But I don't fancy anyone except my husband.
Exactly. But if we think of ourselves at 27 or something, would have been useful.
Yeah.
But then it wouldn't be good to see this panel of people, because what if the person you fancy hadn't turned up and everyone else's had? It'd be like parents going to the nativity play.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, the gap. Oh, no, this is too sad immediately. So let's not talk about your 23-year-old boyfriend and whatever issues he might have had. Let's talk about, so who was your, can you remember your first ever crush? It could be a celebrity or somebody you knew.
I can remember I can remember loving New Kids on the Block, and I think that probably was my first.
And which one did you like?
Joey. Well, it changed, so.
Because there was one that looked like a horse.
Was that
Danny?
Danny. Oh, Danny. Yeah, so I think Danny. I actually did fancy Danny at one point, because I felt like they were all very good looking, and he probably was average looking, but fine, wasn't he?
Yeah.
But compared to them, so I sort of spotted that. And so I fluctuated between Danny and Joey.
And did you ever feel like you were cheating on one with the other? Like it was wrong to switch affiliation, because that's the sort of thing I would have been worried about.
It's funny because you do have that thing, don't you, where you pick one and that's your... And we used to do that in real life as well, with like me and my best friend Joe. We'd be like, it'd be easier if we fancied two best friends, because then, you know, they'd often be together at break time. So we'd work out, you know, do they fancy us? They'd come as a package, so it's just easier pragmatically. But also with these double dates that we used to fantasise about, it would be easier to go on the double dates. I don't know if I did that with, if I picked one. No, I don't think I did feel guilty, actually. I think because they were American, I was like, maybe I'll never meet them because they're American, not because they were a famous pop band.
But I think you're right that a step away, you know, another step away, not only are they a famous pop band, which weirdly teenage girls aren't that phased by.
No,
that's just
absolutely
normal.
No.
But in a different country, how are you going to get there?
I think that was it, like the idea of going to America. You know, we'd been to France, but...
But you didn't fancy Johnny Halliday?
Oh, it's weird.
It's terrible that's the only French pop star I can name.
Well done for thinking of one. JJ Bunnell from The Stranglers.
Oh, there you go.
Actually, he is really hot.
There you go.
But I didn't know about The Stranglers then because I was young. And also he would have been about 20 years older than me, so that would have been really weird.
So bad. You know? Oh, I did a lot of, with my crushes, I did a lot of age calculations because, you know, Hugh Laurie, at the time I fancied Hugh Laurie, I knew that wasn't going to work. And it's weird because I sort of think now, I probably could. I probably should go for it, right?
Well, you should now. A lot of that. Well, also, he's got better and better and better with age, hasn't he?
So unfair.
I feel like Tom Hollander has as well. Like, there are people, I think, with guys, everyone peaks.
Yes.
And I always think, I hope I'm
an ideal age. Yeah, it'll only be when you're 17, you look back and you can go, oh. Turns out 27 was correct.
Turned out 69 was great. Nothing left to live for now. If only I could wind back the
clock
8 months.
If you're getting better and better towards 69, then that's amazing.
Yeah. Oh, so do you think you gradually get better like a graph?
Yes, and then tail away. Yeah.
I was imagining that you actually don't, and then it's suddenly.
Very suddenly, for like 10 minutes.
But what would that be due to? Surgery, haircut... Going to the gym.
Well, no, I like to think it's confidence and knowing what suits you and all of that.
Yeah, no, I do really think that. But I do think it can happen quite quickly that you reach your peak.
Suddenly someone looks incredibly hot. And it is and it is mainly men who, when they're older, are like, oh, my God, why? Louis Theroux. Oh, my God.
Yes.
Unfair.
That's true. Although I think for a while he's been gorgeous.
Yeah, he has been gorgeous for a long time.
I mean, he hasn't declined, has he?
No, he's honestly got better. You look at when he started Weird Weekends. We should get him on the podcast, shouldn't we?
Yeah, we
play
should.
Him this
also,
first.
I was just thinking, imagine if two middle-aged, sorry, but we are men, were discussing whether women had peaked or not yet.
Now, I feel like we've earned this, living under the patriarchy.
All those years, we actually have. Let's do everyone.
Come on.
Louis Theroux, still peaking. Still peaking.
John Stewart may be tailing off now, I don't know.
Do you think so? I haven't seen him recently, but yeah. I mean, I don't want to pick people who've peaked. Be like, they peaked it. There were boys at school who definitely, so that it's interesting. I don't know if you find this as well, but sometimes I go back home and you remember those guys who everyone had all these crushes on at school, especially sort of, they were either sporty guys or they were sometimes at my school, because my school's sort of very arty. They could be guys with long hair who were into bands and stuff.
Yeah, sixth form was definitely the indie boys with long hair were like, oh my God.
Yeah. And then you see them now and you're like, oh, so that's when I think, oh my God, I hope I haven't peaked. Because I still think of myself as like 20. And then you see people from school who you used to fancy and you're like, you're 43. Oh God, I'm 43.
I'm 43 as well. Yeah. Well, I think the lesson is to not base everything on looks, I suppose.
Yeah, I guess that's what we've proved by discussing how good-looking loads of men are. Is this how this show always starts?
No, it's you, Izzy. It's just you. Let's talk about how hot we are, how hot we've been. No, let's not. Let's not do that. So you didn't feel like you were cheating on your new kids on the block?
No, I didn't. No, I didn't. And do you know what? I didn't have a take that. So basically, everyone in my school seemed to like Take That. And for whatever reason, I didn't mind their music, but I didn't get that kind of obsession with Take That.
And was that you sort of doing an identity thing where you're saying, no, I'm different?
Yes, it could have been. You do get that, don't you? Kind of, I'm kicking against this.
Yeah.
Because I did it with Bross as well. I think maybe I was slightly too young for Bross. Mm-hmm. But I remember the ripped jeans and stuff, slightly older girls having that. And by that, I mean girls who were like a year older than me. But when you're young, that's
everything. Oh, no. Well, I remember, because I'm a little bit older than you, and I really had to say little.
Peaked. Yeah.
Don't be saying I haven't peaked.
When I say you haven't peaked, I don't mean that you're not gorgeous now. Imagine meeting somebody like, oh, no, you're yet to peak. Sorry. Let me see you again in 5 years.
I'm going to say that every time I see you from now on.
It's either a compliment or a diss, isn't it?
Yeah, you can take it either way.
You haven't peaked yet.
I haven't peaked
yet. Don't worry. You've got so much. Or, no, sorry, that skirt.
But no, yeah, I with Bros. Older. So Bros were very much my era. So the girls in my class were obsessed with Bros. And actually, I found it quite alienating because I really, and I still don't get it at all. Like, I understand cheekbones and whatever, but that it just wasn't me. Nothing. I mean, I hated the music as well, which didn't help, obviously.
I think it doesn't help. I think it's good that you hated the music, though. Like, I think that's good that you have that opinion, because I think sometimes when you're a young teenager, you're kind of blind to the music.
Yes.
You're just looking at, you're kind of swept up in the whole spectacle of it.
Yeah.
And the idea of going to see them live and the fact that everyone has posters of them. Do people have posters on their walls? I don't know.
Your I think they must.
Old enough, is she just about?
Yeah,
to have...
She's not quite into fancying people, but
does she
has
posters on her wall of, like, I don't know, horse riding competitions.
What?
It's like,
what do you
got
think
kids.
I'm doing to my daughter?
Pony jumping certificate.
Horse riding competition. She's got a poster of a horse riding competition.
Yeah, that she didn't enter. Just.
No, she doesn't have that. No, she has. She does have posters, but they're posters. I mean, now they have things like posters in books and whatever. So you have like a poster from your favourite book or your favourite comic strip whatever.
Of course.
So she'll have that.
My Neighbour Totoro and stuff.
Yeah. My son has a poster of Pokemon or something.
Aww.
I don't think he's even particularly into Pokemon, but anyway. But no, so the Bros thing, in my social life, so age 12, 13, and that is the weird time in your social life where you're sort of doing things without your parents, but not too late and whatever. I remember going to queue for Bros tickets, having no interest in buying them, so I wasn't buying them or whatever, but that was what everyone I knew was doing on the Saturday, was queuing outside Hammersmith Palais. And so I went along and I really loved it. And so I really understood the whole spectacle thing, but also I just was completely alienated from it. As I say, I didn't fancy them. I loved Smash Hits, actually, because that was super funny, but I didn't want to go and scream at them and with them and whatever.
Yeah, so you've got that detached, but in a way that's
it's quite
cool.
Sad. Oh. Well, it was quite, it was both. Let's say it was cool and sad. I mean, because I found, but I did, because comedy became the thing. But it was just a much, much smaller group. It was me and two friends who liked Stephen Fry. And even then I felt I'd slightly bullied them into liking Stephen Fry and going, let's all say that we're married to them and whatever.
Yeah.
And you don't have, if I'd gone to a Fry and Laurie recording and screamed, I would have been thrown out. So it's very much not the same experience. I went to see Robbie Williams on one of his first ever solo gigs because I really liked the Supernaturals, who were the band who was supporting him. And I couldn't understand the screaming. I just stood there going, "What? I don't understand what the screaming is. I don't know what you're screaming at."
But did you ever go through a phase like that where you did?
Screamed.
I've never screamed at a concert.
No, in fact, my mum saw the Beatles and was really annoyed by the screaming, particularly then because she couldn't hear anything.
Well, I mean, yes,
that
must be the really annoying. That reminds me of when, were you there? We went to Hot Tub Cinema.
No.
So it was with Izzy Mant and Michelle Farr. Anyway, people listening won't know who those people are, but they're lovely ladies. But you hired a hot tub, and my sister was there too. You hired a hot tub, and it was on top of a roof in East London, and it was all very, very trendy. And we got a cheaper ticket, which meant we had to share a hot tub with a couple. We were like,
I mean, they've got the bad deal there.
Yeah, I think they have, really. Yeah, we were just like, oh God, you know. I don't think the girl was especially pleased that there were loads of other women in bikinis, like, sitting next to her husband, who she didn't know. But we were all, like, squashed into this boiling hot tub, and actually sitting in a hot tub for 2 hours.
And what was... was that the event?
So the event was you watched a film.
Oh, okay.
So we watched Top Gun, and my sister was there too. And my sister was very annoyed that the sound wasn't loud enough and we couldn't hear. She was like, I'm really trying to follow the plot. And I was like, do you know what? I don't really think that people are here for the plot of Top Gun. But yeah, it reminded me of the screaming thing. And also at the end of that, there was one of the bleakest moments I've ever been party to. There was another hot tub nearby. There were loads of them. And a girl in that hot tub, which had a group in it, took off her bikini top and poured a bottle of Prosecco over her boobs and then looked around and no one in the hot tub was looking at her, so she just put her bikini top back on and only I'd seen. And I was like, oh my God. And also, you've just wasted loads of Prosecco. Yeah.
Oh, well, I always think that when people talk about having a bath in champagne, yeah. I'm always like, wasting. You're getting the champagne all puby.
I always think that with Cleopatra and the milk.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I immediately think practically. I think, yes, I know.
I mean, that was bleak for you, right? But imagine how bleak that is for her. Because that's the sort of thing she will be. How old was she?
Oh, I suppose in her mid-20s.
Yeah. She'll be thinking, if that was me, I would be thinking about that every single night. I'd be waking up at 3 a.m. every single night in a hot flush of shame.
I think the reason that I felt sad for her is because I haven't ever done that, but that is not exactly the kind of thing that I would have done when I was younger, but certainly that feeling of like, I'm going to do something crazy in the moment and see what happens. Like the fact that I jumped off a bridge for a £1 bet because people were like, jump off that bridge. And I was like, okay. And then broke my ankle when I was 13. Like, I am very much that person.
Yeah, exactly. There's no, when I say that thing of shame, it's really weird, isn't it? Because
yeah,
it's
because
the sort
actually,
of thing.
In a way, it's quite, you know, it's like, yeah, why not?
Yeah, absolutely. That should have been a moment that she was like, yes, I'm free and I'm spontaneous and look at me. And she possibly thought it was going to inspire a load of people. And instead, she has one woman staring at her.
It was boiling hot. Had to keep sitting. We had to keep getting up and perching on the top of the hot tub. And
because it was too hot.
It was so hot. Like, it's not good to be, because a hot tub's temperature doesn't go down.
Right.
It's not like a bath. Because I love really hot baths and you get in and you know it's going to get cooler. With a hot tub, the temperature's maintained. So it's not very good for you to be in there for 2 hours.
No. Yeah. It sounds very badly thought through, the whole thing.
But anyway, my sister was very annoyed about the volume. And your mum, it reminded me of your mum being annoyed about the screaming, because I think that's how I would have been too at the Beatles.
Yeah.
I'd be like, I'm trying to listen to Hard Day's Night and I can't hear it.
Yeah, it is. And I honestly think that I'd have felt that even if I was mainly in love with Paul McCartney or whatever. I think that there's still, maybe I wouldn't have been, I don't know. I think there is something amazing about being caught up in that.
Yeah, it's
sort
like group hysteria.
Yeah, yeah. And I've never been involved in that. I've been in, you know, festivals. I've been in big crowds where I've got, you know, hoarse from singing and shouting and whatever, but that doesn't, it was never out of lust.
Yeah. I haven't ever thrown... Oh, I have. So I was going to say, I haven't ever thrown anything at a pop star, like underwear or something, but I did throw a pound coin.
That's an act of abuse.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that's how he took it as well. So Take That came to play Matlock Bath Illuminations, and it was right at the beginning of their careers. The very beginning, I mean, they were playing a kind of road show, you know. There was
going to say
anyone there.
Matlock is not the
it's not a lovely venue called the Pavilion, but yeah, going into a bandstand on a freezing cold night in front of 50 people wasn't alongside Hammersmith Apollo on their tour schedule. But I was right at the front with my friend Joe, and we watched them, and we were like, it was the first. I think I did get a bit giddy because they were wearing like faux leather outfits and stuff, and we were only about 12 or 13. It was just like, oh my God, you know. And then my dad had given me a pound, and they dropped us off. They were going to pick us up, I think, when they were standing at the back, our parents. And I was really enamoured with their performance.
I threw
the pound coin at the stage, not really just to give them money, because I thought it was like busking, and it
you were trying to hit the
hit one of
the
them
pants.
On the head.
Oh my God.
I think it was Howard. It hit him above his eye, on his eyebrow.
Oh my God. Yeah. Maybe you're the reason that he's got that missing bit of eyebrow.
Oh my God.
Wow, we've now got a tabloid scoop here.
Yes, we have.
Wow. So did he react?
He just looked a bit confused. He didn't know where it had come from. Well, there really weren't many audience there, so they could have probably questioned each of us and got to the bottom of it.
I love that idea. Let's everyone stop the music.
Yeah, okay,
we're going
guys.
To question everyone. Yeah. But that wasn't lust either. Or
not
was
really,
it?
Really, although I think I did fancy
Were they just in
them.
Pants? Were they...
I don't remember them being just in pants, but I definitely remember leather or sort of this fake leather, and then maybe braces. I think they used to wear, like, do you know when they used to be topless, but wear trousers with braces.
I think it's really weird the way we're told what's sexy sometimes. I think it's like, why are there these sort of stripes over the nipples? I don't understand. Or chaps, arseless chaps.
No, I know. It's so weird. I don't think that's the case so much anymore, is it, with boy bands? Like, I can't imagine One Direction wearing stuff.
No, but then we do have things like Magic Mike now, which I haven't seen. But
what is that? I'm always confused as to, is it a bit like the Chippendales?
That's the thing. I think it must be the Chippendales, a very high-end Chippendales with a plot.
Yeah, that I get the feeling it's got a plot. But also there's a comic that Samantha Bains...
Yes,
I think
it, so she's in it, so she must be part of the plot.
Yeah. So I couldn't work out what her role... This is only from looking at the adverts, what her role in it. And actually I thought, I must go and see it. And I was like, oh God, this is going to be like full Monty. Like, now I'm the target audience, probably.
Well, we are the target middle-aged ladies
now. Maybe we should go in on our next
Okay, let's do it. Let's do it. I'm well up for that. Because my sister went and saw the film Magic Mike, and she really is not the sort of type, you know, she's not a Chippendales type of person. And she was pregnant at the time, which can make you super horny. And it really did for her. She was completely overwhelmed by it. She was like, she was so, she'll hate me saying this probably, but she was so turned on. Like, she couldn't really cope with it. And I was mesmerised by it. Like, when she was telling me this, I couldn't believe that this, because it's just some film. I would have expected that to be either funny or just sort of tawdry and boring, you know, and the fact that it's genuinely hot
and
is intriguing to me.
It's a film. Imagine what she would do if she went to see them live.
Well, quite.
But that's good in a way.
Yes.
Like, that's what should happen.
Yeah.
Like, it can't... I know what you mean, because I would think that it would be funny, but actually it must work for a lot of people, otherwise it wouldn't be in that genre.
Yeah,
it would
absolutely.
Just be like a weird sub-genre of films that are supposed to be sexy but are just
funny. That aren't. Yeah, yeah.
Of which there are probably loads.
It is.
Yeah.
But it's funny, isn't it? Because I always thought with the Chippendales, it was always... it was mainly laughter that they were getting, you know. It's sort of, it screams, but it's not screams of, ah, take me now. It's like, oh my God, can you believe we're watching this? Something. Can you believe that man's whatever?
Yeah, and if you think of, like, I've never been to a hen do when there's been a stripper, I'm happy to say. But I imagine, and when you sort of hear about it or see it depicted in films, it's sort of funny in that, I don't know, I suppose that typically British way of, like, oh, he's got his socks on, but his willy's out. Not that the stripper would be doing that, but do you know what I mean? Like, he's putting cream on his dick. And,
yeah, no.
Not like, oh, actually, that's really hot.
Yeah. No, I've only been at one event where there was a stripper.
No. I'm going to book one of Magic Mike. I don't know why I've given her a northern accent.
She's really not northern.
I'm going to book one someone from Magic Mike.
Why is she so old?
Big age gap. Reunited maybe later in life. She's 70.
She is 70. That's right. She's
pregnant.
a couple of years younger than my mum. Correct. So this is like another friend's, but I don't think it was a hen do. I think it was a birthday. But it was excruciating, I would say. And I don't think she enjoyed it. I mean, she's one of those people that she absolutely would put on a show of, I'm enjoying this, because somebody has gone to the trouble.
As would I. Because
same.
It's the ultimate rejection of a present.
Yeah.
The present is alive and in front of you. Naked.
Yeah, you have to clap and rub cream on them and whatever. But I don't think she enjoyed it, and I don't really... I think with those things, there's normally like one or two people really enjoying it. And I think generally that's because they find it funny rather than because it's super hot.
Oh, I think that too. And also, I can't imagine... Like your sister coming away from the Magic Mike film and being like, I was actually really turned on. It would be different her at a hen do being like, I saw this stripper and I was so turned on. Somehow that's different.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Yeah, it's the reality of it.
Yeah, maybe actually it being a film was easier because there was the distance.
Yeah, absolutely. This is an advertisement for BetterHelp Therapy Online. What's the first thing you would do if you had an extra hour in your day? I won't lie, I'm thinking nap. Or if I'm already getting a nap, a longer nap. A lot of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but do you ever think about what you would do with it if you did have unlimited time? The best way to squeeze that special thing into your schedule is to work out what's important and then prioritise it. Therapy can help you pin down what matters to you so you can do more of it. The therapy that I've done has been massively helpful with untangling my thoughts in order to make sense of them, so they're not just a clump of anxious screams sitting in my stomach. Therapy isn't about changing who you are as a person, but helping you to find coping strategies for the horrors our lives and our brains throw at us. And the healthier we are mentally, the better we feel physically. If therapy sounds like something you could use, why not give BetterHelp a try? It's entirely online, so it's convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, so no travel time necessary. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a registered therapist and switch therapists anytime for an additional charge. With over 1,000 therapists in the UK already, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Our listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/crush. That's betterhelp.com/crush.
Well, we're back to that American thing.
We are,
of,
yeah. It's easier to... Oh, that thing where... Have you ever had a crush on someone that you sort of know inside is sort of too... Not too good for you, but... you know, like when you're young and it's like... It's maybe someone in sixth form or something.
Yeah.
You just think, they'd never look twice at me. And,
yeah.
But in a strange way, there can be a comfort in that.
Oh,
because
totally.
You know inside. It's a safe way of almost practicing loving someone without
any
chance.
Oh my God, that's exactly what it is. I feel like I didn't tell people that I fancied them, even when something could have happened realistically, like, you know, my late teens and whatever. I still was just absolutely unable, because I'd been so used to the practice version and the safety of it. The idea of exposing myself like that as somebody who fancies people. And yeah. What? And you think they're going to fancy you back or something? Yeah. Oh my God, you idiot.
Yeah.
And so, the safety of having a... So did you have a sixth former or... Like, what's your most intense crush? And that's usually around that time, isn't it? The sort of classic teenage...
Yeah, I remember when Joe Gibbs, my best friend from sort of when I was an early teenager, when we were about... I think we were 13, we fancied two sixth formers called Dan and Tim. And I think Dan might have picked me up physically one day and swung me around. They must have known we fancied them. I mean, nothing ever happened. But they probably were 17. And Tim was a Christian missionary, and he lived in a big...
And was he massive, your one?
No, he was Joe's.
Yeah.
He lived in a big house in Matlock Bath. It's not owned by this missionary group anymore, but there were hundreds of people living there. It was an amazing building, and you could get behind it in the woods, and we used to just go and stand outside it and shout his name, but like through the forest. There's just no way that he would have, and even if he had heard, why would he have come out? There's just two children standing in a wood, you know. But
that's so interesting. That's almost like a ritual, a sort of... You know, that you thought it was, what's the word, telepathic or
like
something,
than,
like, the idea that he'd actually hear you and come out would have been awful.
I know, exactly. It's almost like you're testing reality, isn't it? I don't remember going to Dan's house. I remember he lived in Winster, which was a nearby village. I don't think we ever went there. But then I remember that Joe and I also had a crush on twins, which was the ultimate package. You know, I was talking about them being best friends, which Dan and Tim were, and that was kind of why we fancied them, I think. When it's twins, you're like, amazing, they live together. So if we go outside the house and shout their name, we're getting two for the price of one, essentially. And they lived in Cromford, which is another village near Matlock, and we got the bus there, and we got water pistols, and we stood at the end of their road, and we were like, said so we they were at a different school from us, but we knew a lot of people at that school, and we saw one of their friends who we knew, and we were like, can you go and get them, tell them we've got water pistols. Like, that would mean they'd be like, what's a water pistol, let's go and see. And then we'd sort of spray them. That was our plan.
Yeah,
we'd spray them with the water pistols and be like, they didn't come out.
Pretty sexy. Some children at the bottom of the road with some water pistols.
One of them's got black eyeliner all around her eyes that she's nicked from her mum. I actually think I was different from you. I did go out with a lot. Not only did I go out with a lot of boys when I was quite young, But I also was quite forthright in telling people that I fancied them, and I wrote songs. So Joe and I had a business called Izzy and Joe's Dating Agency.
Oh my God.
And we made stamps saying Izzy and Joe's Dating Agency and stamped them all over my pony certificates. I'm like, no, I didn't have any either. We stamped them all over my swimming certificates and my ballet certificates. All of my certificates. I'm saying all. I had like four probably.
Covered
from
in
that age.
Certificates.
All stamped with Izzy and Joe's Dating Agency all over them. You can't even see my name.
You were enabling other people. Was it just dating for you? Or?
So it was for me and her, basically. So the idea initially was that we would match people up, I guess, our friends with boys,
right?
But that side of it never really took off, and it was just
no
her trying to
no,
find a
this
boyfriend.
This is very much like my cat finding agency.
What was so, that to find your own cat?
No, it was to find. We once stumbled across a lost cat and returned it to its owner, which I can say is a brilliant thing to happen.
Oh,
and we
yeah.
loved it so much that we were like, well, we're clearly really good at this. Let's start an agency. And it's very much that sort of wrong-headed. What do? You walk up and down your own road looking in gardens. That's it.
That is so yeah. exciting.
Yeah.
When you're young.
Yeah.
It's like you've got this secret because everyone else is just using the road in a normal way, but you're looking for this
yes,
thing.
Yes, you've got a mission.
Yeah.
I think, it sort of crushes that. That is what it feels
yeah,
like.
Yeah, it is. And actually, so with Izzy and Joe's Dating Agency, I used to write these songs. And the idea was, again, I think that we'd use the songs
to lure men, like sirens.
From another, from the point of view of one of my friends, I'd write a song about a boy and then she would sing it. So I would have sort of facilitated the beginning of the relationship.
Oh my God.
But again, that didn't really happen. But I did used to write songs from my point of view and Joe's point of view about, and we wrote one for Tim and Dan that was like, Tim, you remind me of a shooting star. And Dan, I always wonder where you are. So she sang the first line, I sang the second line. Then together we'd sing. And you know we'd do anything for you, but you don't love us too. So in all the songs, there was this admittance. And all the songs were like that. It was like, I look at you, you're beautiful, you're amazing, but you will never look my way. And I wonder if there was an element of, you know that way that
don't
people
look
be like,
our way.
This is shit, so don't. You know, like my mum often does it. She's like, oh, I've cooked a pie. It's probably terrible. I don't even know what herbs are in it. Oh, just nobody eat it. Nobody eat it. I sort of think it was a similar thing.
Yeah.
And the pies are always really nice, you know. And we were, with all these boys, we were great. We were a good
catch.
Oh, my
God,
but it
yeah.
was that thing of going, I'll get there first and say that you don't fancy me. So that if you say I'm not interested, I've sort of said, I'm not bothered if you're not interested.
Yeah, and it's really sad. What I think is sad about that is that it would make a boy, even if they liked you, it would make it so hard for them to say, I do like you. And that's sort of the challenge, isn't it? It's sort of go, you want them to say, despite all of that, despite the fact that you have said, I'm not going to, and, you know, you've already sort of rejected me through
yeah.
this song, I'm still going for you.
And also the act of writing someone a song, especially at a young age, is it's hard for them to say, I really like you, because it's scary if writes you a song and you're a 13-year-old boy. Because we used to put it in their bags and there was...
Oh, my God.
There were two best friends that we fancied at the same school as the twins. We'd moved on from the twins since they weren't interested in the water pistols. And they were called Sam and Jack, these two best friends that we fancied. And mine was... Now, I fluctuated from one to the other.
I was going to say, how did that work? Was Joe all right with that?
Yeah, Joe was okay with it. So at first I fancied Sam and she fancied Jack. And we had a song about Jack and two songs about Sam because he was mine. So I wrote two songs for me and one song for her. And we recorded all these songs onto a cassette tape and we went to their school, Anthony Gell School, and left it somehow in one of their bags. And I do not know how. We shouldn't have been allowed into the school. I mean, that wouldn't happen now.
No,
you have to identify yourself.
To go through a metal detector.
In. I know. I don't think it stands up if you buzz the buzzer and then be like, we're here to deliver them some love
songs.
I
love him,
you must. Love will let me in. I'm not a pupil at this school. But yeah, we must have had an inset day because they were all at school. And then somehow or other, we got this tape to them and I'm sure we put it in their bag and that they were in assembly. That's how I remember it. But I don't know how that... We might have even left it at reception maybe and asked them. But they got this tape.
And how do you know? So what was the response?
The reason I know is because we knew a lot of people at that school. And that school was even more kind of arty and bohemian than Highfields, where I went. The headmaster really admired what we'd done.
Aww.
And he played the tape in
no.
assembly.
Oh, my God.
I know.
And what was the response?
Well, they just didn't do anything, these boys. But then...
Did the head teacher do anything, though?
No, the head teacher was just like, what a great initiative. Aww. This is so creative. I really like it. And we were like, no, that wasn't... We didn't want everyone to hear it. The twins might hear it and then there'll be no hope of a future with them. But then, years later, so I was probably about 12 or 13 then, because at 14, everything changed for me and I got my first serious boyfriend, Eddie, and he was 17. So I think a lot happened with at the ages of 12 and 13 for me. And I did then have a relationship with Jack.
Oh my God.
But when I was about, oh God, I don't know, 16 or 17 maybe. So I swapped.
Wow. Yeah. And did he...
When I say relationship,
did he
I mean...
About... That's very intense.
2 weeks of going to gigs together and going, not you. Can I snog you? So yeah, a relationship.
Well, I was going to say, because if... The relationship suggests that you did some proper talking as well. Oh, did he talk about the songs? Because I have to say, nobody has... I mean, I literally own one love letter, one, that I was written by my first boyfriend when we got together. Nobody has ever, ever written me a song or a poem, or if they did, I'd certainly never got to know about it. And I think... It's an amazing thing. And obviously, since he went on, like, he went on to go out with you, so he must have liked you, you know, you
yeah,
were not so
forget,
appalling.
That's true. But it was Joe who fancied him initially.
Right.
So, but yes, I mean, he wasn't freaked out to the extent that... I know what you mean. Like, I think I haven't really got... No one's, as far as I know, written a song about me. I've definitely had... When I was at college and I was going out with a guy... called Tom, who was from Matlock. We used to write each other really nice letters with like quizzes in them and stuff. And I left them all. I left them all behind in Guildford when I moved once. I mean, I don't know. I'd never get them out and look at them now.
No.
I just feel a bit weird about, you know, like even if you read your old diary, it's the worst. It's a bit like eating junk food. You're like, oh my God. And then after about 10 minutes, you just feel like shit. And you're like, oh, this is wrong. It just feels wrong to
It's really funny you say that because I maybe about a year ago now, I mean, sort of maybe early pandemic, so hadn't gone entirely mad, but was a bit mad. And I found some of my old letters. And again, they're not love letters, or so I thought. And I started to read one and I completely freaked out because it was from a male friend of mine. And it was a very, very odd letter. And reading it now, I realised... Oh, I think he's trying to say he liked me.
See, that's what I thought.
Oh, God.
As soon as you said you'd only got one love letter, I thought, I bet you've got more than one, but you just couldn't tell
just
they
couldn't
were a
tell.
Love letter.
Because
sometimes they're not the kind of stereotypical... Often, a love letter isn't, we're together and I miss you so much and I love you.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like a kind of complex situation.
Yeah,
where you
it
know
was
each other
such
and you're,
a
yeah,
complex situation.
Yeah, there might be a bit of nagging or that, you know.
Well, it was all written in third person. No, it was written about me. So it was all written like, and I know this girl and she thinks this and she's this and she's this. And it was very intense and not very coherent. Like, I think he was having a terrible time as well. Not just about me, but... In the letter, like reading it now, I think when I read it, I was like, I don't understand this. And also, I was scared because I didn't like him in that way and I didn't want to have to deal with that. Reading it now, it's like, oh my God, this is so obvious that this is a problem. And I felt so ashamed because I thought, I bet I reacted to this really badly. I bet the letter I wrote to him was awful. But it did, yeah, it did make me think, oh God, because actually... Crushes, one of the reasons that crushes is such an interesting topic is that there's all of that safety and whatever in the real distant ones. And then when it gets closer, it gets much more dangerous. And I think the truth is that when someone has a crush on you and you're not interested, it's sort of the worst thing in the world.
Oh, yeah. It's hard. Like, I think I definitely went out with... And again, when I say went out with, I do mean, like, nothing serious. Didn't have sex with them or anything, but literally sort of held hands with them and stuff. Boys when I was at school because I didn't dare to tell them that I didn't fancy them.
Oh,
and
God.
Also it was a bit of a novelty someone fancied me, wasn't it?
And oh, it should be a lovely thing. It should just be a wow. When it happens to other people, I'm always like, just be grateful someone fancies
you.
Especially
our age.
Exactly. Nothing's going on.
I fancy you, Margaret.
Thank you. I've been waiting for that.
You haven't.
Yeah, thank you. I'm going up and up and up. Anyone who says different is a liar.
No, I know. It should be lovely. But then
But so you, but when you were going out with them, you, what, you didn't fancy them?
I don't know.
You just felt like sometimes I felt didn't want to let them down.
It's so, like, being a teenager is, you're so, like, confused about your own identity, confused about what you would be like in a relationship. Everything. I found everything confusing. And I was quite angsty. And especially as I got to be kind of 14, 15 upwards, I was, like, quite rebellious, doing things I shouldn't, to be honest, kind of staying out late, started smoking weed, kind of. So I was very inward looking and very kind of, who am I? And I never ever liked being stoned. And I sort of did it because my friends did it and then stopped after a bit and was like, I'm so pleased that I've stopped doing that. But it was like, for me, everything was like, I better do this because my friends are doing it.
Yeah.
And I sometimes think that it was the same with crushes. Like I would maybe sort of go, oh, well, he fancies me, so I should fancy him, like without really looking at my instincts. So I didn't know how to trust my instincts.
Yeah.
And I felt like, I've never really thought about this before, but I think this is true. There were lads that I went out with, and I don't include my first proper boyfriend in this and a few other relationships that I had kind of getting towards my 20s. But generally sort of in my younger teens, there were like lads that I would go out with. But then there was like a separate category of guys that I really, really, really fancied but would never approach. So it was almost like I was like, kind of going, like, that's like the Hollywood life I will never attain, but this is the Matlock life. So go out with this guy in triple denim because it's the best you're going to get.
#Matlock life.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, that's so interesting. And I never did that. I mean, I didn't even if I did fancy someone, I would almost go the other way and just be, I mean, utterly reject myself before anything could happen. But I do.
But when you saw them, would you be kind of like, yeah, hi? Or would you, like, you know that way that people can be when they fancy people? They can kind of be a bit,
awful.
Like, passive aggressive, really. And
Yeah. No, I mean, I definitely, there was a boy who, and I still feel sad about this now, because he was sort of my perfect type on paper, and we met in a pub, and he just chatted to me, and he did this thing where he did up, when I was putting my coat on, he did it up for me as he was talking to me. It's so sweet and actually really hot, and I really fancied him, and it didn't even cross my mind that he fancied me and that I might be able to respond in a way that would be like, hey, we should go for a date. And afterwards my friends were all like, what's wrong with you? Seriously, what's wrong with you? But I was so scared of rejection that even the idea of showing interest was wrong and bad. And I think there's some ego stuff going on there as well, because I was going to say, it's interesting you saying that about going out with boys, because, like, well, he fancies me, I should fancy him, because I was definitely part of a culture where I know I sort of forced one of my friends to go out with someone that she didn't really like. She probably slightly fancied him. She fancied him enough to get off with him a couple of times, by which I mean snog. I found out recently the older generation thinks that's sex, and that's
a big deal. Generation? Well, isn't that us?
No, my parents. There are people who are alive who are not us. but I was very much like, no, you keep saying you want a boyfriend. You keep saying nobody fancies you. Well, he fancies you, so you should go out with him. And it was almost like I was saying, rationally, you have to go out with him.
Yeah.
And that's so wrong. It's so wrong, because I would never, like, somebody, you know, it's like peer pressuring, literally peer pressurizing someone into going out with someone. That's awful.
Well, I know.
But I just really felt like, no, if I'm not getting this, you have to get it. You know, someone
it's
fancies
weird.
you have to go out with them. Go
yeah,
on.
It's weird, but I think you were probably like projecting onto her or whatever the term is. Like, I'm sure I've done stuff like that. I've definitely like tried to get my mates to go out with guys I fancied so that we could like.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like Joe and Izzy's dating agency.
Yeah,
was very much a double dating.
Oh, absolutely. And like,
were you in love with each other? I mean, and I don't mean that in a sexual way. Yeah, that intensity.
No, we were like best friends for a good few years, but I don't think I felt that. I'm thinking of Anne of Green Gables and Diana. Diana, best friends, and then she says we're bosom friends.
Yeah,
I didn't necessarily feel like that with Joe. It was a really lovely friendship, and we had a real laugh. But no, it wasn't that kind of intense. I know what you mean. I haven't actually had that with a girl I haven't got that with a girl in my life now, but I remember having that. I remember having crushes on girls in that way of really wanting to be them, like dress like them and stuff. And that's what I think you mean by that, like that thing of like,
I want
almost
to be
it's
you.
So intense. Yeah. Like, yeah. I haven't had a friendship like that, but I've definitely felt that, like, absolutely. And that's confusing as well, because I thought,
so
am I bisexual? Yeah. Do I fancy them, or do I just want to sort of be them? Do I want to kind of absorb them like a weird animal would and kind of, you know... sort of like
that's going to kill
like
any relationship if you say to them, I'd like to absorb you like a weird animal. That, I mean, I'm glad no one wrote that to me in a poem or a letter.
I will write you a song.
Will you?
Yeah,
oh, I'd
with
love
that line in it.
I want to absorb you like a weird animal. So we've covered your teenage years. As you got older, was there anybody that you felt that kind of intense crush on, or did you start to just have relationships?
I think whenever anyone asks me who I have a crush on, who's on telly, I say Bruce Willis. because I think, like, that's now... But then I sort of mean him, like, in Die Hard and stuff.
Right,
like,
yeah.
Not necessarily now, although he looks great. And they're all my references are really out of date because I don't really have... Or Brad Pitt, who's also old,
quite...
and I'm thinking of him in Thelma and Louise, you know, which is probably, like, 25 years old.
Yeah.
But, like, when I did the comedy thing as well, you know, you were saying you got into comedy. Like, I remember really bonding with my friends over... The Day to Day and Brass Eye were like the first things I remember watching on my own, like not with my parents, and maybe Bottom. And then we were absolutely obsessed with Mary Whitehouse Experience, which you probably were too.
Yeah.
We went to see Punt and Dennis and Newman and Badil multiple times. I had a pair of jeans with their signatures on the thighs.
Oh my God. Yeah. They signed your thighs, or did you take them off?
No, they signed my thighs, and I distinctly remember Newman and Badil being more comfortable with that than Punt and Dennis. Do you remember being
that
at Derby Assembly Rooms and had gone to just see Punt and Dennis, and neither of them wanted to be signing a 16-year-old girl's thighs? I mean, it wasn't high up, it was just above the knee, but it is a little bit odd.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I was, yeah, obsessed, particularly with Rob Newman. That was almost my first... proper sexual crush. It's like I was not imagining marrying him and having, you know, cups of tea and whatever. Magic Mike levels.
Yeah.
And I remember I saw them and I asked for Rob Newman's autograph. And then, honestly, because I thought, well, that was just rude not to, I turned to David Baddiel and I said, oh, could I have yours as well? And Rob Newman said... Oh, we always worry that someone's going to ask just one of us and not the other. Yeah. But what I did was I did that, but I went, oh, to David Baddiel. And now I think, oh, my God, that's the last thing you want, isn't it? It's a 14-year-old going, oh, poor you.
I know. I was really obsessed with Rob Newman as well. And both, I sort of, I mean, I liked all of them. But I fancied Rob.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think you might know this, but I gave him like reams and reams of poetry in Norwich that I'd written. And he kept them in his pocket for the whole gig and I could see them in his pocket. And it was just like the most mind-blowing.
Oh, my God, that's so mind-blowing.
I know. And we gave a postcard to David at that gig. So I'd given Rob. And I remember my friend's mum, Julia, came with us and, you know, she was... older, obviously, she was Hannah's mum, and she was so kind of no nonsense about it. We were like in the cafe beforehand; they were there. That's how I gave him the poems.
I feel honestly, the adrenaline is coursing through.
And I had them with me. I was like, "Will I give them to him? They weren't love poems in any way. They were poems about how nothing is real, and you know, things like the children of tomorrow. Like none of it meant anything. I was like 15, but there were reams and reams of A4 pieces of paper." So they weren't directed at him. They were samples of my work. Wow. So actually, I wanted him to say that I was a good writer. Yeah. That's the truth. I didn't want him really necessarily to fancy me. I wanted him to kind of acknowledge my talent.
Yeah.
But Julia, we were sitting there and we could see them. I can't imagine this happening now before a gig, but they were in the cafe with the audience for some reason. And I was like, oh my God, I can't do it. I can't do it. I can't. And Julia, and we have this postcard for David and we didn't know what to write, and we'd put "We're from Matlock" with the sheep and drawn a picture of a sheep. Matlock hasn't even really got that many sheep. It's a market town. It has got countryside around it, but it's not like, it's not really a sheep place. But we just were like, oh, what can we put? And Julia was like, if you two don't go over there now and give them this stuff, I'm just going to go over. And we were like, no, because that was the one thing that was worse.
No, you can't.
The idea of her mum going over. And so we went over and gave them to them.
And were they...
Yeah,
nice.
They accepted them. And then Rob, so we must have seen them again afterwards, because I remember Rob saying that he'd had them in his pocket for the whole gig and I'd seen them in his pocket. And he said they were great, I think. And he kept them.
Oh, my God. And you met him later, didn't you?
Yes, I did meet him later, yeah. So that was like... Well, meeting
did you talk
him,
about those that poetry?
No, and I never told him that I... Because I think it's a weird thing. There's like a sort of... Newman and Badil were massive to my year group and probably like and yours, you know, at that time they were, and they're fantastic comics, and so are Punt and Dennis, and they've all really stood the test of time.
Yeah.
But now the odd thing is, and don't you find this, that people like Hugh Laurie, you've probably met, because it's quite actually a small industry. So these people who we fancy when you were younger, the chances are you are probably going to meet them.
Yeah.
Maybe more than once.
No, absolutely. So they're like, going to be in your circle.
Yeah.
I haven't had this with Hugh Laurie, which is why I've kept him sort of safe on a shelf. Yeah. But no, I have had experience of people that, and you're right, you can't really...
I think you can't marry the two... I think if I'd been like, he probably would remember. And if he's listening now, like I would remember if someone in Norwich in the 90s had given me, or, you know, not necessarily the 90s. If I was doing a gig now in Norwich with the next show I write and someone gives me 20
Dreams.
A4 sides of poetry about the children of tomorrow, I would remember that. So I sort of didn't want to be like, do you remember this? Because then it puts this weird dynamic on things.
Absolutely. Right? Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, you can't... Because you're immediately then... That relationship, you've set that relationship again is I was the strange fan girl. There's... Because there's a few people that I've met who I had fan hero interactions with earlier. And so the people that I've met, then when I've worked with them, it's like, no, 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 I'd like a work relationship now, if not a friendship, not a... Oh my God, I love you. I had a letter framed of yours or whatever. Because I know if someone said that to me, you can't then just go, oh, let's go for a drink.
No,
because it becomes about ego and
you can't,
hierarchy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, then I think their instinct would be like, oh, right, okay, so this is the dynamic.
Yeah.
And then they perhaps wouldn't be as open with you. And it kind of gets a bit tricky, I think. So,
yeah,
I think it's better to keep those things. It was nice, though. I think it's nice knowing that stuff and sort of being like, it's nice meeting these people who I used to have posters of on my wall. How many times does that... And it's the same with me with Carter, the Unstoppable Sex Machine, the band, who I didn't really fancy, but I just adored their music and went to see them so many times. And now I know Jim Bob, as so do you.
Yeah, yeah.
And the first time I met him, it was like... I just, if I had told my 14-year-old self, I just wouldn't have believed it.
No,
so
never.
So I think we're very lucky, actually. I don't think many people end up doing a job where they get to meet.
No, and actually it's one of those things I think about a lot when I'm feeling sad about my career. I have to remind myself of things like that, little things. Like in 1993, I saw Richard Herring's Ra-Ra Rasputin show in Edinburgh. And that was such a pivotal experience, going to Edinburgh that year and sort of going, oh my God, this exists, the world of comedy exists. And then knowing him now, and it's a completely different thing, but every now and then, and actually the fact that I got to do Edinburgh shows is huge. Would have been, he'd told me that when I was a teenager, that would have been enough. You know, I'd have been like, well, don't be so greedy.
Well, I know, but we always want more. It's human nature, isn't it?
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah, you have to remind yourself of that.
Yeah.
So of the people that we've covered today, and there have been many, you've been high numbers, I'm very pleased. Which would you say was the biggest, the most intense?
It was probably Joey McIntyre from New Kids.
Joey McIntyre.
Because although I went between him and Danny, it was always originally Joey, and it has always been Joey.
Yeah. And what would you say to him now?
Is there anything? What was it like being in a band when you were so young? Did you lose much money? Did you have a good... I think I just talked to him about the business side of things. Were you happy? Were you tired?
Do you know what he looks like now?
No, I don't know what he's doing now. A lot of them go into management, don't they? Which is probably quite canny. Did you get a good deal? Did you make much money? What was it like having all that adoration? I think it must have been quite odd to have
the eye
so
of the storm.
Many teenage girls just, yeah.
Yeah, lovely. And we should, so Joey.
Yeah, and are we doing that? So it's hard, isn't it? I don't know if McIntyre has an A in it or not, which
No,
is
I seem to remember it doesn't. Yeah, you should know,
I know
things like that. I'm a bit
my
disappointed.
Biggest crush, I know. And is it Joey or Joseph? I used to call him Joey.
Well, let's say Joey,
okay.
but you should be Isabel.
Yeah.
Sati.
Okay, and it doesn't have the A. Fine.
What doesn't have the A? Oh, no, I don't think it does.
I suppose it doesn't matter anyway, does it, if we're doing love?
No, I've remembered, because I read Smash It so much. I mean, I did not like New Kids on the Block, but I did know how to spell their names. one. The pressure to V. No V's.
No V's. David was always good, wasn't it? Because it had a V.
Yes.
I did used to use this to see whether I should get together with someone.
I believe this 100%.
And there was another one where things went downwards and you counted and it ended in a different thing every time, like marriage, sex.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Somebody
was
talking about this.
An acronym.
Flames.
Flames,
someone said.
Yes.
Yeah. I didn't do that. Now I'm
friendship, love. Arguments, marriage. What was E? Sex.
Erotica.
Yeah.
Right, so I've done the important maths and it's bad news, I'm afraid, okay. Izzy. But I suppose it's good news because you're engaged and have two children. So I'm sure that your partner will be delighted
he will
to hear
be, yeah.
It's only 48%.
Oh,
so
yeah, that's not even a pass.
Not really
is
a
it
pass. In,
yeah.
No, it's a D.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
But Izzy, it's been a delight. I feel like I've learnt so much. Thank you very much.
It's been a great pleasure.
I won't say amen.
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 Crushed by Margaret Caborn-Smith was hosted by Margaret Caborn-Smith and produced by Sophie Black. Thanks to everyone at the amazing TVC Soho. And if you enjoy the podcast, please remember to like and subscribe as it helps people find where we are.